reaction wheels. The three reaction wheels in the three planes of the satellite are there to hold it in exactly the right orientation. They've been run up, they've been tested, they work. Part of the satellite in range in 11 minutes. The reaction wheels haven't been done any more than tested yet, simply because we've got to be sure that we're in a position to open the solar cells properly before we can run the reaction wheels and the solar cells at the same time. The satellite was set up for quite a different orbit than it's now in. The result of that is, of course, that we have a problem in getting all the sunlight we would like onto the solar cells. The solar cells were designed to be on a 60 degree high orbit above the equator. In fact, it's 6 degrees. So we're trying to adjust the and to work out the probability of how many watts, instead of 600 watts, are we going to get 400 watts from the solar cells, because there'll be at a different angle with regard to the sun. We also have some work to do still in writing software, because until we've decided at exactly what attitude we want to have the satellite at, then we can't write all the software to put in there. Some of these things take time, and many of our people who write these things and so on have day jobs as well as doing their satellite work. Dick Daniels, a member of our board of directors, with the 400 Newton engine, the one that caused the problem. Dick feels extremely badly about this, but it wasn't his fault. But he was reinstalling it and testing it and one thing or another, and there was a problem with the valve. We tested all the valves. They seemed to work just fine on the ground. There was a little cap on one of the valves, and we said, should we remove that? And the manufacturer said, no, keep that cap there. That's just fine. We should have removed it. That caused the problems. When this everything was installed, we did enormous propulsion leak inspections and tests just to make sure that none of this hydrazine was going to get out into the satellite. Unfortunately, as we now know, due to the internal problem with the valve, it did. There was enormous checking of all the RF, the telemetry. I think this picture was actually taken in our lab in Orlando at the time. The person who is looking towards the front of the picture from the back is Michael Fletcher, OH4, I can't remember all his call sign, but Michael did a tremendous amount of work on that. I mentioned to you that we were interested in, finally, we had to put some solar blankets onto the final, or thermal blankets, onto the final iteration of the satellite before we put it in onto the rocket. And Dick Jansen there is adding some final touches similarly to the yellow strip, which is a mylar strip, giving solar protection. And you can see he's already had it put on the bottom of the on the bottom of the satellite. The satellite is then put into this big ring. And that ring goes up with the satellite. There are three mounting pads in there, which we'll see in a second. While it was in there, they started putting in the hydrazine and all the nitrous oxide, ammonia for the smaller rocketry, and in a clean room. The hydrazine is so bad You can see they were all dressed up as spacemen, putting it in there. There was absolutely any amount of that hydrazine is enough to one cc let loose in the room would apparently eat the lungs out of the people in the room. So that's the sort of stuff you're dealing with. And they were all dressed up and with pressurized suits to make sure that if there was a spill, they were going to be completely safe. The final assembly building, Batmore, it's all in French. As a Canadian, I've got to admit, my French isn't that good. You can see the height of the building in which the rocket is now going to be totally assembled. The big ring is lowered with our satellite in it on the right hand side here onto what is actually the top of the rocketry. At that stage, there are various things which are red tagged. Remove this tag before flight because it's connected to something that mustn't go. Valves, one thing or another. Final adjustment of removing the motor safety plug and installing the flight plug. Two satellites, you can see them at 4 o'clock and 11 o'clock, 5 and 10, whatever. Either side, British satellites sitting on the outside of the ring and ready to they leave before we do in the sequence of going off. Yes. Then we have the bell that covers us, the flaring, that is bolted down, and we are all in there, closed, and we're not going to, until we actually get rid of the flaring later in the flight, we are closed in. There she is, ready to go. There she is going. And it's up there. The intended orbit was to be 47,014 kilometers from the Earth, and or a total of 64,000 from perigee to apogee. It actually is about 63,000 from the Earth, and in total about 72,000 from perigee to apogee. Answer to your question, you can see PAS 1 hour sitting right on top of that flaring that was bolted down. That was the primary mission load. When she gets out into space, the overall flaring was jettisoned. Once there was no more air resistance to it, the thing to do was to get rid of that so it would come back to Earth as quickly as possible. The blue PAS-1R was then ready to be released at the appropriate point, and it was done so, and it just left beautifully. The two small satellites, STRV-1C and STRV-1D, were then jettisoned by springs and put into space, and they started rotating around their orbit. That left the adapter and AO-40. The next thing that happened was explosive bolts. We let the adapter off, and spring loaded that out of the way, so that we would then be able to be jettisoned out. And we had three mounting points inside the big ring. Those three mounting points each had a major spring under them and a little explosive bolt on the top. All three bolts were exploded. She just lifted out. Oh, just like that, very slowly, and just went out. Of course, she's traveling at 18,000 miles an hour, but comparative to the rest of the body, it went out slowly. And right on schedule, right on time, and no problems at all. So it was out there in the right orbit and everything fine. We tried, the perigee was fine where we expected it, the apogee was fine, the inclination was 6.5 degrees being near the equator, and we now expected, okay, we're going to get it into the right orbit that we want. So we fired the thruster. The first attempt of firing the thruster failed. It didn't generate enough helium pressure, which operates all the valve systems and so on. And again, a tested valve, which opened to get the helium out to give us helium pressure to work everything else, didn't. It responded, but it didn't open. The shuttle inside the valve, its electronic the solenoid, tried to open, but it wouldn't open. So we had a second attempt. We had an extended burn. Why? Because the thing wouldn't shut again. And that extended burn, I was in the UK on business, and I got a urgent telephone call from Lou McFadden. He said, "Robin, it's on its way to Mars." And we were not quite sure. If we'd had a burn of about another minute, it could well have been. Anyhow, fortunately, the apogee was somewhere between 59,000, put it in there, and I think due to the effects of moon and so on, it goes up to at times about 61.5. Anyway, we figured, well, okay, it's there, we can do something with it. And NORAD said yes, they agreed that it was where we thought it was and so on. Very useful, NORAD. They've got these big dishes, radar dishes, and they can tell us at any time how many pieces we're in and where we are.